is the third noble factor of the Eightfold Path, which is right speech. And we could probably spend the rest of the year now just this topic. I find the topic of right speech to be, as a practice, the practice of right speech, the one of the more difficult practices for me personally, to explore and to stay mindful as I speak and mindful of what I speak about and how I speak. Now, I just want to maybe mention that the Eightfold Path is often divided into three different categories of things. The classic trainings in Buddhism are the trainings in ethics, in meditation, and in wisdom. And the Eightfold Path then is divided into these three. So the first two, which we've covered now, which is right views and right intention, belong to the factor, the training of wisdom. The next three is speech, action, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And they belong to the training called ethics. And then the last three, which is effort, energy or engagement, and mindfulness and concentration, belong to the training of meditation. And so today we come to these three that belong to the training of ethics, have to do with ethics. And I want to mention that the word for ethics in Buddhism is sila. And one of the synonyms that the tradition gives for this word sila is a word, I think it's pronounced, if I remember right, samadana. And samadana, if that's the right one, what it means harmony. Sometimes it can mean coordination or cooperation. And the idea is that ethics in Buddhism is synonymous with the idea of harmony, finding ourselves in harmony with ourselves and the world around us, with our people that we know and things like that. That ethics in Buddhism is not an obligation. It doesn't come from a sense of duty, but rather comes from a sense of according oneself with a natural harmony of oneself within oneself and the world around us. So we come to right speech, and I think perhaps it's significant that of the three ethical trainings in the Eightfold Path, right speech is first. Because right speech is so central to how we live our lives and the effect we have on our lives and the lives of other people, that if we just took care of right speech, I think our life would be would clear itself up a lot. A tremendous amount of suffering, as we all know, I believe, comes from how we speak. Wrong speech, hurtful speech, malicious speech, angry speech, cynical speech. And probably most of us, if we think about how we've been hurt in our own life the most, I suspect the big proportion of us would say it happened through the vehicle of speech. And we probably all remember how certain things that we were told, the way that we were told was very painful, or just unnecessary things were said that were extremely painful. So right speech is first. And I'm reminded, maybe because of the children's program today, there's a sermon, a teaching sutra by the Buddha, where he teaches his son, who's 7 years old. This is supposedly the first teachings he gives his own son. And part of it has to do with the analogy of a mirror. And just like the mirror reflects things, so we should let our mind reflect what goes on in the mind, reflect the world, and just let the mind be like a mirror. But in the other part of the sermon is the Buddha says to his son, he picks up probably his alms bowl, a bowl, and there's a little bit of water, just a bit of water inside the bowl. And the Buddha says to his son, you see how there's only a little bit of water in this bowl? In the same way, a person who lies, who engages in false speech, has only a very, very little bit of spiritual maturity, spiritual understanding. And then he goes, and the Buddha throws the water away. And he says, you see that little bit of water being discarded? Just like that, a person who speaks falsely, who lies, is discarding whatever sense of spiritual, whatever spiritual understanding or maturity or level that they've reached. They're discarding it. And you see this empty bowl? Just as a person who lies, just as a bowl is empty now of water, so a person who lies is empty of all spiritual virtue, all spiritual qualities. And then he takes the bowl and puts it upside down. And he says, you see this upside down bowl? Just as a person who lies has turned upside down all their own spiritual virtues, all their own spiritual maturity. And that was his first teaching, and to his son, the first spiritual teachings that he gave the seven-year-old. And then continuously, I think, through his teachings, emphasis all over and over again on the importance of paying attention to our speech and how we speak. In the category of right speech, then there are considered to be four kinds of speech which are considered to be wrong speech. And the first one, which I just talked about a little bit, is lying, is false speech. The second is slander. And the third is harsh speech. And the fourth is idle chatter. And those four. Now what's interesting, what's important always in Buddhism, in Buddhist ethics, is the intention, the motivation that goes behind behind the act. So what's the motivation behind our speech? Why do we sometimes engage in false speech, in wrong speech, in harsh speech? I think what you'll find if you look is you'll find there's an intention there. And that intention, whatever that intention might be, that intention in and of itself is painful, is suffering. We're talking, you know, the context for all this is the Four Noble Truths. And the Four Noble Truths says that our suffering arises because we hold tightly to our desires and our aversions. The consequence of holding tightly causes suffering. It can have lots of painful consequences in our life. But more central, more immediate, is the holding itself is painful. To hold tightly to something, that in itself is painful. We don't have to want to live an ethical life in Buddhism out of some should, you know, in the distance, that it's the consequences are terrible, therefore we shouldn't do it. If you're really sensitive, you can feel the pain of the holding itself that has to be there in order for us to break an ethical precept. You can feel the pain of that holding, and it wants to be released. It wants to relax. That's what it wants. It's begging us, please release me. So the intention behind our speech, to study that, what is it behind it? So often there's intention of ambition, of fear, of desire, of hate, of aversion, of restlessness, of boredom. What goes behind the way that we speak? So in falsehood, speaking falsely, what are some of the reasons? I ask you now, what are some of the reasons you can think of why we might lie? What are the motivations behind it?
To increase our own advantage.
Self-serving. Ambition.
There's no food left.
Fear. That was a popular one, huh? What else?
To avoid the consequences of our actions.
Can you say a little bit more?
Well, I hadn't thought it out all the way, but if someone asked me if I did something and I think I'm going to be punished if I did, then I say, oh no, that wasn't me. Somebody else.
I'm not responsible. What else?
Protect someone's feelings.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a little bit tricky sometimes to decide. What's the bigger picture sometimes? Is it better to protect someone's feeling, or is it better to be honest and let them know? Yes?
Fear.
Lynn?
Possibly laziness. You don't know the truth, and so you just make something up.
Oh, like in some places I've been, some countries I've been, you ask the directions. And they'll never say they don't know. They'll never say they don't know. What I've learned, you have to ask three different people. And then you take the, you know, if you get two people pointing the same direction, you go in that direction. laziness. Sometimes, being honest, then you have to stay around and hang out for a while and clear up what's going on.
But looking at the bigger picture, people sometimes give, who are defending that lying may be the appropriate thing to do. The example always given is in World War II at the time of the Gestapo,
sure.
If you're hiding some Jews and the Nazis come and want to know where they are, the ethical thing there would be to lie. So you do have to look at the whole picture and the intention.
Yeah. It's true. Most of us, you know, aren't exactly in that kind of dramatic situation. But it's interesting. I read the Mercury, something called Mercury News article about Les Kay's book. Les Kay is the local Zen master. And he worked at IBM for years, for 30 years. Most of you read it, huh? So maybe I don't have to say it. But you know, he had the same situation there, where he was, as the article says, he wrote a review for someone, and then some superior came and said, you need to change it and make it lower, make it a worse review for your employee. And he refused. And as a result of that, he was transferred. And as a result of that, his person who was under him had a different boss, and he didn't become workable, and he kind of quit and went off other places, and it was not a very happy ending. And it made him think, maybe I need to take the bigger situation into account. And my role, he says in the article, was to take care of the welfare of the people who I was the manager for. And for me to have such a strong moral stance, you know, I'm not going to, you know, budge on this issue, wasn't necessarily taking care of the person I was supposed to take care of. So that raises a lot of questions, you know. And when I read that, my wife and I talked about it a little bit, and I said, you know, I hope that he didn't feel like he had to go back. What he should have done is lied. But maybe he also shouldn't have just taken a categorical position, and he maybe should have gone back and talked to his boss and had a serious conversation about what was going on and maybe found another avenue to solve the problem. I'm a great believer in hanging out with conflict. When two people are polarized and they have different points of view and they can't agree, you hang in there. And you try everything. You kind of hang in there. And you don't necessarily give in, but you don't necessarily walk away either. You hang in there with the tension, with the problem. And often I find, if you hang in there long enough and really kind of use your head and use your heart and use everything, sometimes, often, a third possibility will arise that no one thought about before. That third possibility satisfies both people. So... But anyway, yeah, sometimes, maybe it's appropriate to lie. I suspect that what's often said, and this has been my experience in my own life sometimes, is lies breed lies. And if once you start lying about a small thing, even if it seems maybe it's justified or whatever, then you have to kind of protect that and add another story to protect that, and so it goes. Yes?
Not maybe more of a kind of lying that you would say in Thailand.
Yes. Yes. I've told this here. I was so impressed. Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on silence. You know, so that's kind of one of the shortcomings. It's one of the beautiful things about Buddhism. But sometimes Buddhists are really good at not saying anything. Oh, you know, any conflict. And it's very Buddhist. You know, you're not supposed to say anything. And I've known lots and lots of Buddhists who have hidden behind silence, kind of pretending perhaps that this is a good Buddhist response, but it's really hiding from conflict by just being silent and not really talking about something. But I was so impressed. So coming from my Buddhist background, there is a lot of value. Silence is also great. The word Muni, you know Shakyamuni? Shakya is the tribe of the Buddha. So, and Muni means usually translated as sage. And so he's a sage. He's a sage of the Shakya clan, Shakyamuni Buddha. But the word Muni means silent. And so there's an old tradition that sages didn't speak much; they kept their silence. If you can't improve on silence, don't speak. But so coming from that kind of background that I had, I was outside a church in Boston, and there was a kind of a logo, a little sign, a little saying by Elie Wiesel, And it said, silence is never the answer. And I thought that was, that kind of stopped me from, I thought that was a very important message. Sometimes it is, but considering who was saying it, I wasn't going to argue. Yes, Bill.
In reference to the evaluation, the employee evaluation, I read recently, there was a flyer that came around at work. I have to write evaluation. So this flyer came around at work where recently some personnel managers had been sued because they had written favorable evaluations for people. These people had taken these evaluations and gotten other jobs and messed up, basically. And, you know, and so the people, the future employers, had taken these letters of recommendation and come back and sued the personnel managers. So
be careful.
Well, it made me think. You know, there's lying and there's not lying. And then there is the half truth that tells a complete lie. You say all of the good things about a person, but you don't mention any of the bad things about them. And that's an incomplete truth as well, which is one of the things that I do all the time. Is that, you know, I do it because I tend to look for the good things in people and avoid the bad things.
So one of the motivations for lies of omissions is avoiding a difficulty, avoiding discomfort, avoiding a problematic situation. In the back, Jean.
It's like we're talking about the same one. In that case, they really should have been sued, and actually, I think even the state should have sued those people, because what it was a high school principal who was a child molester.
Right.
And they didn't. So they let him go get another job where he could molest more children.
Right.
And so it was very
pretty glaring, a lie of omission.
In your Thursday night classes, you talked about the four ways to evaluate whether you should say the truth, and one is, or whether you should say something. One is it true, but also is it kind, and is it useful, and is it,
is it conducive to social, to concord, to?
And I'm just, I'm curious why you're not really talking about those things yet tonight. And two, they seem to make a big difference for me in evaluating, because sometimes, you know, to get into a whole spiel about what all the surrounding context is about an issue, it's just easy to say
those four.
Yes or whatever, but some simple answer that.
That's a very good point.
Or even if you know, if I'm not feeling, if I'm, one example that keeps getting me is if I'm, you know, really burnt out about work and I don't want to take a vacation day, but I have a sick time and I'm calling sick. But am I really sick? Well, you know. But if I'm kind to myself, and it's you.
3 out of 4. I don't know. Yeah.
But I mean, a mental health day, or something. I mean, a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's justified. You know. But I was wondering what your comments would be about the useful and kind and conducive parts of it, how they relate to if there's an absolute edict that you shouldn't lie.
Well, I don't know if there's no absolute edict. That's why in Buddhism there's no obligation or absolute. And it's, you know, I think there's a tremendous emphasis in Buddhism in the context, you know, situational-based kind of ethics. So you take the best understanding you have about consequences, about relationship with people, and effects that things have on you. See the situation and kind of do the best you can. And the offering that Buddhism gives is that it's not useful to lie. But Buddhism, remember, when Buddhism isn't necessarily always talking about external consequences. Buddhism has, you know, Buddhism just, you know, what is it? But But what the Buddha could really talk about is what has consequence for your own inner spiritual unfolding. If you lie, that in order to lie, the moment of lying, there's a kind of closing down of the heart, we can say, of the inner intention, of the karma, whatever. And that has consequences within us. The consequences might be minuscule if it's saying you're sick and then getting a day off finally and finally getting a chance to rest. The consequences might be minuscule compared to the benefits of resting a day. However, it still will have a deleterious effect, that lying. So you should know that's the case. And knowing that's the case, then you can decide, you know, where the balance is and what's appropriate. So from that point of view, lying is always inappropriate. I mean, lying is always unwholesome. There's no way of getting around that. But, you know, it's, you know, you, depending on the situation.
I remember, you know, you reminded me of the other thing you said once, that's, there's a lot less to remember when you're talking.
Yeah.
I noticed that you're calling sick and you have to go in and think,
exactly.
How are you feeling? You say, oh, I'm much better. And then 3 weeks, oh yeah, I was sick that, you know. I mean, it's true. There's a lot more to remember when you're.
Great. I hadn't even remembered that I'd said that. It's great to have students. Yes.
Just in reflecting on issues people have brought up about performance evaluations, etc., it really points to the fact that our hierarchical society is maintained by wounding.
Yes.
Practices of all kinds, whether they're child rearing practices,
yes,
or employment practices.
That's for sure.
And yet the alternative to not protecting oneself and to live from right principles is to be like Tibet and be taken over by those who do desire power.
Yeah, it's a complicated issue. But yeah, I think that's what you said in the beginning about the hierarchy. We are a hierarchical culture, and one of the ways that the people superiors control the people subordinates is through the way they speak to them, what they tell them. You know, you're wrong. You know, the situation is wrong, and the subordinate is kind of frustrated, complains, and then, you know, gets angry, and then you're told you can't get angry. It's not it's problems with you, not with the situation. And then they internalize the anger, and then it gets worse and worse. Yes?
What's the difference between lying and delusion? I mean, we've talked about kind of old,
yeah,
stuff. You know.
Well, I suppose that lying is an intentional act to deceive. Delusion, you know, I probably say delusionary things all the time. But I hope, you know, I might even think I'm saying the truth.
So the ethics comes in the sense of the intention behind it.
Yes, yes. But it gets a little bit more complicated for Buddhism in that delusion, I'll say it this way, delusion that arises out of ignorance that is an ignoring. If you're actually ignoring, kind of turning away, and therefore you're delusional, that creates karma also. So you're not necessarily, just because it's delusional doesn't necessarily get your karma off free. It depends on how you got there.
Why I ask that is, I've met realized teachers, both in the Buddhist tradition and in the Vedanta tradition, fully realized teachers, and one of the marks, and these are people that I've met over the course of my life who did not know each other or anything like that, there's no connection between them. One of the marks that I've found in talking with these people is that they cannot lie. That they don't have a choice. It's not in their nature, it's not in their being to lie anymore.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps at one time in their life, but they did not and could not lie.
Yeah, that's kind of been my experience too, and I hope that's the case. I mean, I sincerely hope. It makes sense to me because to whatever degree, when I've been in touch with some deep spiritual reality for myself, I can't conceive of lying from that place. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just a tremendous violation to do it, even for something. And I don't want to put myself in the category at all, you know, those people. But just today, it reminds me. Now, what was the situation? I called someone. Oh, yeah. It occurred to me to lie today. And it was a very small thing. It wasn't a big thing. It was mostly lying a lie of omission, mostly. It had to do with someone was going to set up. I was going to talk to this monk who is back east. And arranged for him to be at the phone at the right time, kind of, you know, it was kind of a trick. So someone was going to contact that person, so that, and arrange a time. And so my friend called me, said, "Okay, time's been arranged." But actually, I didn't need to talk to that person anymore. So it was kind of complicated. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just. It's complicated. I don't even know clear. But anyway, I was thinking of somehow. Kind of lying about the situation, kind of not saying what actually happened. So I called finally to explain I didn't need to have the conversation, I didn't need to talk to the monk. And I guess this is silly, I mean, it's not going anywhere, but. But anyway, it did occur to me to lie today. And when I came to the phone and actually spoke, I couldn't. And I just told it the way it was. So I don't know if I should be embarrassed or delighted.
Creates reality,
and if that's so, why wouldn't it be desirable to lie about potentially desirable outcomes? if you can get a potentially desirable thing.
Well, no, that's really for a good, you know, for everyone's good. That we will all be healthy and happy,
If thinking creates reality. I don't know if it's that simple. But as I said earlier, I think in order to lie, that the act of lying itself, in and of itself, is suffering. So if you want to, if you take a situation and you look at the wider consequences and decide that the wider benefits outweigh the smaller consequences of the pain for yourself, maybe you'll decide to lie. But I hope not. I think one of the beautiful things, I believe, is to be in a society of people where you can trust the other person's word, where you know that the other people are going to be honest also. And if we start kind of in small ways saying, well, I'm going to lie because it's beneficial, you know, it helps me a little bit here or there. I mean, even an example, you know, at work, you know, lying about a sick day. I mean, maybe it's, you know, in the moment, it might be really a great thing for that day. But are you then going to start getting reputation? Or are people not going to start being able to trust you? Or you're not going to trust other people? And other people call in and say, I'm sick. Well, wait a minute. I lied, so maybe they can lie. So I think, you know, once we start creating a culture of lying, even allowing small amounts of it, you know, the bigger consequences, I think, can be very bad. Even though the immediate consequences sometimes might be better. To be known that you can be trusted. So I try to be as honest as I can, but sometimes it's more of an issue for me than others. And there's one person, kind of an acquaintance I have dealings with, who I feel the relationship is slightly complicated, difficult. And I've determined that with this person, I'm going to tell her exactly where I stand and what I feel about her and how I feel about the situation. And I'm not going to let her, I'm going to really make clear to her that she's always going to know where I stand with her. And even though I might be wrong, I'm going to tell her. Even if I'm, you know, kind of, and I'll tell her, sometimes I'll tell her, this is the way I feel about you right now. And I suspect it's my projection. I don't really think it's true. But I want you to know that this is where I'm at. So you can know that you can rely on my word. You can rely on where I'm at. I'm not going to hide anything from you. So I prefaced something. I said, you know, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I carry. This is the image I carry in my head of you. And with that kind of preface to it, she wasn't so threatened by it. And it was painful. It was kind of awkward for her to hear it anyway. But I'm hoping the consequence is that she knows she can trust my word. So that this complicated relationship we have can become simpler.
She can trust your word, but maybe she doesn't want to talk to you.
she has to.
That just brings up the question of the times when we lie to ourselves. Say we want to take the day off and we say, I need it because I'm so tired. But actually there's something we want to do and not rest.
How many of you lie to yourself? How many don't want to admit it?
It's hard sometimes to know the truth.
It's hard to know the truth. So remember, the Eightfold Path starts with the right view. And so that's, you know, knowing the truth. But it's also knowing perhaps when it's an interpretation or when we're not sure. So this is my point of view. You know, I think this is the case, but I'm not sure. Bonnie.
That just reminds me of maybe slightly off the subject, but of an excellent program that I never saw, but have the transcript of the Bill Moore's program on lies and self-conception. And it talks about some of the pressures of why we deceive ourselves and then what happens in groups, whether they be families, small organizations, societies, nations, and what are the pressures on people to lie to maintain an image of a family group. It's, I think, helpful to think about that in order to resist it.
Yes.
Oftentimes, if you don't go along with a lie that's requested and required of you as part of whatever group it is, you will find yourself outside that group or excluded. And to know that may well be the consequence of Christ. Anyway.
Office picnics, they're great. I love office picnics. They're the greatest idea. You know, another office picnic, you know, but you have to go along. You know, everybody loves it. We love them. Well, this is maybe non sequitur, but there's a story of during Khrushchev's days in what's it called, the Congress, the Senate they have in Moscow. The big Duma. Yeah. So they had this big meeting there, and when Khrushchev said something, or maybe it was Stalin, you know. His story was Stalin. It was like I was reminded of this because I was watching the State of the Union address, and Clinton would say something, you know, and people start clapping, you know, and it was like it's a ritual, you know, people stand. It felt like a ritual, you know, but they had the same ritual in Moscow, but in Moscow, no one wanted to be the first person to stop clapping. So the story goes that you can clap for 15, 20 minutes, and Stalin said something, and everybody went. So the day, you know, not. I guess this connection is, you know, you don't want to step. You don't want to be the person who stands out from everybody else. So you go along. Yes.
All the talk about the consequences of lying, and when are the consequences of lying, has made me think about how. I often don't know. I mean, I might think I know a bigger picture, but there's often an even bigger picture.
Yes.
I don't know where not lying might help. And I'm thinking of times when, like, for example, the work thing. Like, maybe if every employee refused to lie about needing time off, work policies would be forced to change. Or things in my own family where I've spoken up and not lied about things, and it's really pissed people off, and there's been years of silence. But then years later, you know, people... a lot of healing because of that. And but then again, I mean, like, I don't know, I would never want to admit to Jews being in my house and having them be killed. I mean, you know, it's so hard to know.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the hard things about being human. It's not knowing.
I think that's very wise, that you're looking at the really larger picture and the consequences. You know, that in the little picture, it might be beneficial in a sense, but in the larger consequence, even though there might be some pain in the short term, in the larger picture, it really creates the best situation. Yes?
It seems like another way to talk about this is also about keeping commitments, too, because a lot of times commitments are made verbally and I just find that's a big part of my day working with children. Like I make a commitment to this child.
Yeah.
I have to be really mindful not to forget it, even if it's like a small thing.
Yeah. So, are you good for your word?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a part of, you know, traditional cultures before we all became so anonymous. And, you know, but traditional cultures, a person's word was very, very important in standing by their... You know, the word faith in Chinese, the character for the word faith in Chinese is the character for a man, a person, next to the character for words. And a person who stands next to his or her words, that's faith. And, you know, that's the word for faith, for trust. Say the same word, trust or confidence. Yes.
This question reminds me of, I can accept the 8 precepts if it's a more ethical way of leading my life, you know. But I find it, because this cause-effect problem here, I have a hard time applying this as, or making a moral judgment or ethical judgment on other sections, especially when you think about politicians who, by their very nature, you know, must participate in a little bit of misleading your life. You mentioned Clinton or figuring out Jefferson, you know. Politics is it's inherently a job. There's a little bit of sleight of hand going on. The relationship between cause and effect, you know. When it gets me to Churchill, like during the Second World War, tons of disinformation are lying, if you want to say, going on. You know, like he knew that German planes, because they had cracked the code, and Enigma, he knew that certain planes were going to bomb the hull of Coventry and destroy the place. But he didn't dare redirect his airplanes to defend the city because he wanted that knowledge to get out because of the greater importance. So, you know, we can lead our lives according to these principles, but don't still be so judgmental on other people. You really don't know what's going on behind their decision making.
So in some ways, that segues to the second wrong speech is slander. Slander is kind of, judging is maybe a private thing, but then to judge someone and talk about it, judge someone negatively and talk about it, is considered slander in Buddhism, is considered to be a source of wrong speech, malicious speech. You don't have to judge other people. We don't know.
It's not a matter of whether it's true. Slander.
Slander, from the Buddhist point of view, is more like malicious speech, and sometimes truth can be used maliciously. So slander is a kind of speech that creates discord. It separates people, divides people, and rather than makes concord. And so it usually it says in Buddhism that the intention for slander is usually hate. Last thing.
And this raises the question of art, let's say fiction and painting, which some people say is all lies. Because it's not an exact representation of reality.
Well, then you get into Zen. and it's said that, you know, in the West we have Pinocchio, right? The more you lie, the longer your nose gets. In Zen, the story is you get longer and longer eyebrows. and it's said that Zen masters, you know, when they get old, they have really long eyebrows. Because if you're a Zen master, everything you say is a lie. But, you know, you have to understand that this comes out of a whole philosophy and point of view and, you know, like art, you know. So you have to understand the context for why they're saying that. You said art, and I said Zen. okay, Bill.
Art and Zen both are distilled truth.
Oh boy, what isn't? So here we are. Well, that was fun tonight. It was nice to have more. It's more like a living room, having a conversation. So I'm leaving, ending now. I'm kind of feel that I would like to spend next week also talking more about speech. Is that okay with you all? Mm-hmm. Kind of slow down the Eightfold Path. And so we'll kind of keep talking about it. So you guys can, you can think about speech next week and practice with it, and then we can bring up the subject again. So thank you all. Good night.